Welcome to Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna.
That is caught! Touchdown! Oh my gosh! How did that happen? He got it from 59 yards away for the win!
Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna, is brought to you by Ticket Exchange, Community First Credit Union, Carey Limousine, Wachovia, Sonny's Barbecue, and by Everbank. Jaguars This Week begins right now.
And so we go. Jaguars This Week, presented by Aetna from Everbank Field in Jacksonville. Brian Sexton, Jeff Lagerman, John Osher, Joe Fortunato, and of course, you're welcome, 355-NFL1. 800-355-6351 to jump in on the program this evening. Guys, let's start with this. Chicago Sun-Times this morning, a column suggesting that the Bears, who were scheduled to open training camp 2 weeks from Saturday, should basically tell the league, hey, look, if you're not going to get it done and we don't camp on time, we don't want to risk our players and play in the Hall of Fame game. Meaning that the Hall of Fame game is going to have some resistance, at least from one of the two opponents, if they don't get things done really quickly here.
Yeah, they can resist all they want, but if they get it done, the league tells them to play, they're going to play.
Well, I would agree, but it's interesting to see it in print. But
yeah, it is.
Two weeks from the start of the first training camp, that kind of puts it in perspective, don't you think, Loggy?
Well, I mean, we had talked, you know, back when we were doing our timeline, that you know, this July 4th was our date, you know, and now we've passed July 4th, and other people are throwing dates around that are the end of this week and next week, and we just couldn't figure out how in the world that could go off without a hitch.
So let's establish the timeline from this moment forward. At what point do things get pushed back? Do things get canceled? Next week's the middle of July.
In my opinion, after this week, things are going to get pushed. When I say pushed, I'm talking about with the possibility of doing everything in its entirety.
Okay.
The Hall of Fame game could just go by the wayside. I mean, that just could be a casualty of labor mess. I mean, so if you keep that game in there, this week is the deadline. If that game goes out the window, which I don't see how that could happen, because, I mean, you have a whole amount of events that surround the induction of the class members.
They've already said that despite the game, there will still be – they have to have a ceremony scheduled. I mean, they've got these guys scheduled to fly in and hotel rooms booked. The Hall of Fame will still do their ceremony on the day that it's scheduled, but what they're saying is, or at least suggesting is, there may not be a game to go with it.
Well, the latest news to come out is that the mediator, magistrate judge, Arthur Boylan, is that the correct pronunciation,
I assume?
Boylan,
it is.
He is scheduled to take a vacation on Saturday. And
what do you think the chances are a judge takes a three-day, four-day vacation?
Well, I mean, it's kind of funny that, hey, I've got a vacation on Saturday. And he could tell the parties that, hey, look, it's either time to get it done now or it's not going to happen. I mean, from today until Friday is certainly enough time to get the deal done, in my opinion.
Okay.
The worry that I have is that if something doesn't get done soon, and when I say soon, I mean this week or next week, then we're going to reach that point where things are going to be lost. And when you get to that point where things are going to get lost, things could get ugly again. Because if it gets done in this nice, clean window, both parties can be happy. If it happens past that window, money starts getting lost, and one side may say, hey, look, if we're going to do this thing and we're going to sacrifice, let's just go ahead and my perspective on that statement there comes mainly from ownership side, and they're going to say, hey, we've already lost this. We're going to lose this next week. Let's just go ahead and get what we wanted from the get-go. And they're not going to be so chipper about getting things done on time. So I believe that this week is the magic window.
Well, and the commissioner reportedly returns to New York in the meetings tomorrow along with D. Smith, who leads the union. So you've got to get something done in the next couple of days or you do have to start pulling the trigger. Now, here's a thought for you. If they push things back, and you said your thought was they'd get everything in the entirety, does the preseason get pushed back, or do preseason games just get lopped off the schedule?
You know,
$200 million a week in the preseason is the revenue to the league.
I can't see them losing those games. I mean, it could happen to where they could just say, okay, everybody's not going to play. You know, for those in the Hall of Fame, you're not going to play your first two preseason games. Everybody else, you're just not going to play the first. You know, we got to push everything back. But I think if you get into – when I say this week is the magic window, and certainly I think it would be stretching it to go into next week, is that could you all of a sudden change the schedule and start moving preseason game dates and everything else? That opens up a whole nother can of worms.
Although it's easier than it used to be, because it used to be you had a lot of NFL teams that were splitting stadiums with baseball.
Maybe.
You don't really have that dynamic anymore.
Maybe. But, I mean, there are still certain events that are going on at different venues that are non-football related that, I think would be very difficult.
And you've got people with plans and school getting back started again, Friday night games.
Jerry Jones, he's got a women's bowling championship at Cowboy Stadium, I guess, coming up. Okay, well, if he has certain events scheduled because Jerry's trying to get as many events as he possibly can in the Cowboy Stadium, well, what if he has to change a date for a preseason game for an opponent, and then that opponent there, because the preseason, you never have games on
Sunday.
It's always hodgepodge. You have maybe 4 days between this game, maybe 5 days between this game, sometimes 7 days, and now all of a sudden you get into a whole – it's not as easy to adjust a preseason schedule, in my opinion, than it is to adjust a regular season schedule.
Well, the only reason it would be doable, though, is there are – you do have – Thursday, Friday, Saturday. You have, if there's an event scheduled on a Friday in a stadium, you could theoretically push it back to Saturday. But then you run into what you're saying is if a team's got a Thursday scheduled this week, they don't want to play Saturday.
No, because they may have a game the following week, on a Wednesday.
Right, right. I believe that from what you're hearing, from all the reports, I think they're close, and I think the real crucial dates – or Thursday and Friday of next week. I don't think you can go much
next
beyond
week.
Of next week. I don't think you can go
and
much
to me,
beyond that.
That may be okay, but you'd have to eliminate the Hall of Fame game.
I would say that's a possibility. I don't know that they're ready to start talking elimination yet, but I would think it would certainly be a possibility.
355-NFL, 1-800-355-6351. You mentioned Boylan's going on vacation. You've got the commissioner coming back in. Before we take our break, you have, from the beginning, since you got here, espoused the idea that it would get settled. No issues. Now, all of a sudden, you've got the retired players, Carl Eller and that group, with their lawsuit that's come onto the stage. How does that wrinkle the fabric, so to speak, right now? Because they're suing to get a seat at that table. Logs, you're a retired player. What do you think? Should they be at that table right now in a more vigorous position than they have been?
Well, I understand why they did it. It was in response to they were talking about, the pie. And where would the retired player monies come from in that pie? Would it come from the owner's side or would it come from the player side? And D. Smith basically said that it's not going to come from our side. It has to come from elsewhere. So I understand why the retired players did that. And my opinion is it should be a shared responsibility. I think it should come from both sides. And then you guys figure out where the number is after that. I mean, it's the right thing to do for a union to say part of the pie of our retired players that serve this game so great should come from our share.
Well, if they're smart, they
understand. It's the right thing to do.
You bet it is.
And by them coming out or saying that that's not going to come from our pie, it's going to come from the owner's pie, to me, was not a very good political move by the union in reference to the retired players, because I know it's hard for a lot of current players to see themselves being in that other group, but they're all going to be there. And you need as many allies as you possibly can have in any labor issue. And the retired players, they certainly can command a lot of respect in any room.
You bet.
And certainly command the respect of a lot of writers, reporters, and such. To me, that was a terrible move by D. Smith.
Well, short-sighted also. I mean, these current players are someday going to be retired players. They'd be wise to set up a program everybody.
Over the last year or two, there have been so many different retired player groups that have tried to form. You've got Mike Dick. I mean, you got what, like three different, maybe even four different entities. It's NFL retired players.
Yes.
Then you have
NFL alumni.
NFL alumni. and then the fourth and long group. I mean, all these mm-hmm. different groups are forming up, and the reason they're all forming up is because the retired players aren't happy. Well, why are they not happy?
They're not well represented.
There you go.
All right, let's take a break. We'll come back more with Jeff, John Osher, Joe Fortunato, and you at 355-NFL-1. You're listening to Jaguars This Week, presented as always by our friends at Aetna, and only on News Talk Radio WOKV. Depend on it. Well, become a part of Jaguars Advantage, the new Jaguars fan loyalty program. With Jaguars Advantage, season ticket owners can earn up to 15% cash back at hundreds of their favorite online retailers. For more information, go to jaguarsadvantage.com. Real quick, without naming him, a member of the Jaguars ticketing department was in here and basically said that there's an avalanche just waiting to fall when they do get a solution.
And I hope so.
And that's
because it's going to have to be a big one.
Well, and he wasn't even really talking about people coming in to buy the tickets yet. He was just talking about all the tickets and things that are going out. I mean, there's so many moving parts in every team, not just the league, that has to happen. And then, as he said, you know, we'd really give us the problem of not having enough hours in the day and enough days in the week to be able to accommodate everybody.
Well,
that's what they hope.
You know what's going to be crazy is, you know, when and if this thing gets solved in the next couple weeks, this will be, I mean, you take what typically takes, what, from, you know, March until July, and you condense it all the way down for the most part.
I mean,
obviously the draft has happened, but I mean, the college free agent class hasn't happened. Free agency hasn't happened. I mean, it's going to be the fastest paced couple of weeks that we have ever seen in the National Football League. And the teams that aren't prepared, because there are certain teams that aren't prepared for anything,
yeah,
even when they've got the time to do that, are going to get hurt, and get hurt in a big way.
From a physical conditioning standpoint, how long will it take a player? Let's just use the Bears and the Rams as an example. Let's say they get this deal done next week, and they open camp a week late. They're supposed to open on the 23rd. Let's say they don't open until the 30th, which then gives you 8 days before that Hall of Fame game. If, as John suggested, the league says, hey, that game is going on,
It could be done.
Could they play?
Yeah, they could.
Or would
you
have a rash of players dropping with hamstrings and knees?
No, I think there's one thing certainly is going to happen, I believe, and that's going to be an expanded roster for training camp. And when you have that, you're going to have more bodies to be able to play in one of five preseason games. So I think that will certainly take a lot of the edge off. You know, I've been a big believer in that, you know, you really don't need that many preseason games, and you don't need that much training camp in years past. But, I mean, this is a totally different animal. You haven't had OTAs. You haven't had the off-season camps. You haven't had all the things you typically have. It would be much easier to say, well, this can be done no problem in 8 days if you had all the rest, but you haven't.
Well, a couple of things. First of all, guys who have been injured, guys like Aaron Kampman and Maurice Jones-Drew, who are coming back without having the offseason to spend around Mike Ryan and the medical training staff. So how do you approach those players coming back?
They don't play. I mean, if they were, you know, on the Bears roster, they just wouldn't play. You know, that would fall on, you know, the 10 extra, you know, mm-hmm. guys that you've got on the roster that are going to have to be the, you know, bear the brunt of that extra time. You know.
To me,
it's going to be crazy. It's going to be one of those. It's going to be a couple weeks to where you thank goodness for smartphones, you know, because you're going to be wanting to get every, I mean, updates are going to be flying.
Twitter's going to
bang, 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 bang. And you're not going to be, if you live your life on a computer and you don't have a smartphone and you're in the industry and you're a fan.
Go get one.
Yeah.
You can't afford to be away from it. Here's the second question. You've often talked about the early days of your career where you didn't have the long, continuous off-season
program. No,
we had
a three-day camp,
right,
in the off-season. That was it.
So you got yourself in shape to come to camp.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no reason why these players shouldn't be able to do the same, right?
Yeah, but I mean, but here's the problem with that. And it shouldn't be a problem. But today's players aren't accustomed to having to do that. You know,
true.
Back in the day, you know, that's what it was. And you knew how to train yourself. The one benefit that today's player has, I think that you know, players of my early part of my career, you know, the late 80s, early 90s, is they didn't have the IMG training academies. They didn't have, you know, a HIT type center. I mean, all these other places that have popped up and all these markets that are training athletes to be at a higher level. Those things didn't even exist. You know, you had personal trainers, you know, every now and again, but you didn't have these high-tech places. So maybe that helps. But, I mean, how many of them are there? I think there's two
right.
that are kind of known around, you know, the NFL. You know, the one in Arizona and the yeah. one in Bradenton. Besides that, I mean, how you can't train 1,200-something guys, 1,300 guys at two places. You know, and I've been reading up on you know, players that certain players, because they are college players leaving college, have no way to support and pay for something like that. How do they get that type of or that level of training to prepare for an NFL camp when they don't have any money? I mean, Blaine Gabbert doesn't have any money. I mean, he could certainly get a loan
right.
if he had to because of his income potential or his mom and dad or whatever. But, you know, a guy who's a fourth-round pick, a fifth-round pick. And
who doesn't have the resources, the personal resources to do it.
Some of these guys, it may be difficult for them to even be able to join a gym.
For what it's worth, the NBA lockout now has started, and I've been reading about a lot of NBA players who are going back to their alma maters, but you're not talking about nearly as many players. I mean, you're talking about 6, 8, 10, 12 guys going back to any particular school in the summer when those players aren't there anyway. So I wonder whether these guys could go back to Michigan or Texas or Florida State and work out with their strength coaches, but those guys go on vacation too. So it's very interesting dynamic, and it's one we're going to follow. The injury report, especially early in camp, is going to be one that's going. It's going to come top of mind. I mean, everyone's going to want to know who tweaked their hamstring and how much do you push it.
Yeah, and so I'm a big believer in that the injuries won't be as great
right.
as what a lot of them fear
because your body got more time.
You got a break. Yeah, I mean, I think some injuries come about because of overtraining, and that the body never really gets a break.
Right.
You know, I mean,
we had a lot of players say they were enjoying the off time. They didn't mind the lockout.
Well, I mean,
Wes Welker was back in Oklahoma working out, and he said, "Oh, this is fine. Can we do this every year?"
Yeah, well, ask him that question in September when he doesn't have a paycheck.
Well, that's I mean, I get your point.
He's not going to like it so much.
But I wonder now. There is some talk that one of the byproducts of this is that we will not see the continuous off-season training program like it's become over the last 15, 20 years.
And to me, that's okay. You know, to me, that'd be a good thing. If I were a player today, that's one of the things I'd be beating the drum on is, hey, let's, you know, trim some of these things that we've got to do in the offseason. I'm okay with going into the gym and working out.
Right.
I'm okay with going out and running.
What's your livelihood?
But the on-the-field practice days where things sometimes can get out of hand, and I wouldn't even say sometimes, most of the time.
Right.
And you're not in pads. To me, that I don't like that. Yeah, I watch – for example, the Jaguars last year, remember how we just kept talking about how intense these OTA practices were out here at there in the Blue Cross Blue Shield of Florida studio, or not studios, not
Florida Blue Practice years. Facility. Yeah,
Florida Blue Practice Facility. We were sitting there watching practices out there going, whoo.
Yeah.
I mean,
careful.
The rules of no contact, they don't apply anymore. It's gotten way out of control.
Well, they're probably going to be reapplied, at least from the player's perspective. So, hey, we've reached the bottom of the hour. You have something to say?
Yeah, U.S. Magistrate Judge Arthur Boylan
yes.
is, according to ESPN, is now expected to go on vacation starting Saturday. So ESPN.com is now saying the two parties hope to achieve a true framework for a new CBA by the close of business Friday.
All right. We'll see if they can get it done. 30 more minutes of this fine radio program after the news, including Loggy's analysis of Jaguars' fourth-round pick, safety Chris Brzezinski from Wyoming. All that after the news on News Talk Radio, WOKV. Depend on it. All right, rolling right along. Second half hour now. Jaguars this week presented by Aetna. No deal, not stopping us. Certainly not stopping Logs from watching tape. Well, we've talked to think about every one of the Jaguars' draft choices with the exception of this young man, safety Chris Brzezinski from Wyoming. It's obviously a position of need. Can he play? Can he be impactful this year? And where does he go?
No, I think he's a good, solid player. He doesn't make you go, wow. But, you know, I mean, what do you expect from what, fifth-round draft pick?
He's fourth-round.
Fourth-round draft pick. I mean, he's solid. He's a very good tackler. His tackling makes you go, wow. His ability to close the gap from A to B across the field very fast, doesn't make any mistakes. He's a, you can tell he's a smart player. He's communicating a lot before the play to all of his teammates. He's kind of running the show. But, you know, the wow factor comes from a safety, is, you know, an Ed Reed, a Polamalu, the guys that, that really has a knack for the ball, and he's not a ball-type safety. He's a solid player at safety position.
Strong, or, I mean, does he compete with, why can't I think of his name? 36.
Don Carey.
No, not Don Carey.
My first thought was when I watched him.
Courtney Green.
Was maybe he's going to end up, because I was looking at his size. You know, he's a white guy at Wyoming, safety. You know, probably not that fast. I'm thinking, well, he's probably a box safety. That's not really the way they played him at Wyoming. He was the guy who played the middle of the field. They played a lot of cover two deep. But when they needed a guy deep middle, that's where he was at. So
he's an athletic guy.
Yeah, so I think he's going to end up competing with a Don Carey.
Okay.
He's bigger than Don Carey. You know, when you look at Don Carey, you think corner. You certainly don't think safety when you just look at him physically. Przinski looks like a safety. You know, he's big. He's put together. I watched four games. I watched him play Texas, and they got absolutely hammered by Texas at Texas. Yeah. There really wasn't a whole lot to see in that game. He played well against Air Force. He got a personal foul one time for hitting a guy. But it was one of those deals where you sit there and you go, what was wrong with that? He had a nice interception against Air Force that I thought was a very strong play, stepped in front of a slant route. So he's got ball skills, and he can catch the ball. The thing that kind of made me go, uh-oh, was in that game with about 7, 8 minutes, maybe 9 minutes left in the fourth quarter, he pulled up with a hamstring. Kept on playing till about the 4 or 5 minute mark, and then came out of the game. And so I immediately went to watch the game after that, which was the team in Ohio.
Toledo.
And sure enough, the next week he was back in the lineup. You could tell that he was not opening it up in some cases, but was effective. Then I watched the Boise State game, and Boise State is really good.
Yeah.
I mean, really good, especially when you watch them against a team like Wyoming. And I obviously watched Wyoming's defense against Boise's offense, and that offense is something else to watch. It's hard to get a gauge to watch a team on TV because you don't get to see, boy, you see Boise State's offense run against Wyoming's defense, and wow. And in that game, Przinski had a little, where the old play-action fake, and it was the old play, and I can't remember whether they call it the Rambo or they call it Statue of Liberty. I mean, you guys could probably figure it out. The quarterback hands the ball to the running back. He runs into the line of scrimmage, stops, and flips the ball back to the quarterback. Is that a Statue of Liberty or is that a Rambo pass?
The Statue of Liberty was mine. Was when the quarterback holds the ball back and a receiver comes behind him and takes it.
Okay, so I think it's a Rambo pass.
Yeah.
So anyway, when Przinski saw the running back head towards the line of scrimmage, he was coming up, and there goes the receiver.
Oh, wow.
And flipped it back to the quarterback, and over the top, touchdown.
They made a lot of people look silly last year.
But, I mean, a good, solid player that's got real nice closing speed, sure tackler, good, solid player, about what you'd expect in, you know, fourth-round draft pick, you know. The ones that make you go, wow, you know, an Ed Reed or a Troy Polamalu. I mean, those are the guys that, you know, you'd like to be able to get at safety. But, I mean,
those are top 10 picks.
How many 15. Of them have come along in the last 20 years?
Right, top 15, 20 players. Sanders would have been a first-round pick if he hadn't come out hurt. The impact guys at safety go, you know, first, second round.
Earl Thomas from Texas went last year, what, 14th to Seattle?
Right.
I mean, he was a top 15 pick. So,
and most people think you don't spend on that position in the first round unless you know you're getting special talent.
Yeah, he's a good player. You know, he's a good player. He's got good size. He's got good speed. He's a very good tackler. Those are the things you got. He's fairly athletic. He's, you know, he's not stiff. He's very smart. You can tell the way he plays and that he rarely takes false steps in his reads. And a lot of safeties, half the battle is that you got to know where to be and getting that edge mentally. You know, and if you watch Ed Reed play, Ed Reed is special in that people say that he gambles a lot. Well, he does sometimes. But I'd like to call Ed Reed an educated guesser, because Ed plays the percentages, and that's why sometimes he is completely out of position and he's making a play, because he studied the offense, he studied the formation, he studied the tendencies and the slight subtleties and maybe a wide receiver's split away from the tackle, or you know a particular alignment of another slot receiver away from the play. I mean, Ed studies those things, and he educated guesses more than he does truly guessing. But I like him. I like him. I mean, I think he's going to compete for the free safety position right away.
Really?
Yeah.
Yes.
All right. I was going to say, is that your opinion based on?
That's what, yeah. I mean, he's going to compete. They would obviously like to sign a veteran to
shore things up.
Well, to play that position. But, you know, he's going to compete. And frankly, with a fourth-round safety, if you get a guy who contributes in a big way on special teams early and can be a backup and can play the spot and make you feel good if the guy you sign as a starter is hurt, that's a successful pick. If you get 4 years out of this guy and he starts some games and is a good backup and good special teams player, that's what you're looking for out of that spot. If he starts, it's a bonus.
I'm trying to think of the safety that plays for San Diego.
Eric Weddle.
Yeah. Right.
I mean, was Weddle a guy when coming out of college, people were like, hey, man, that guy's great?
No, he was a second-round pick.
Good, smart, heady player that turned into something better than what I think most people expected.
Sometimes you have to draft those good, smart, heady players, and when they're in their second or third years, they're better than good, smart, heady players.
Yeah, and then you hope that they turn into something.
Right.
So, but I liked him, and it was pretty interesting, too, because, you know, watching the games – the Texas game, he wears number 24 in college. And then the next game I go to watch is against Air Force, and I don't see him, but I see him. In other words, I don't see 24. I see the same guy physically, but he's wearing number 12. I'm like, what's the deal with that? And so then I go to the next game, and somebody else is wearing 12. And then the next game, somebody else is wearing 12. Last year, The Wyoming football team lost one of their players to an auto accident, and as part of the tribute, they ended up wearing this guy's jersey, a number of players did, for different games. And so that's what it was.
Cool.
And I thought that was pretty neat to watch, because the 12 was floating around everywhere watching the film today.
Anything to add on Przinski?
No, just that, again, he's a fourth-round safety, and I think they feel like he can come in and – If they have him on the field, they don't feel like he's going to hurt him. And they feel like over time he's going to develop. And that's what you want out of a fourth-round safety. He's not a first-round safety. They're not thinking he's automatically going to come in and start and, you know, make impact improvement right away. But they feel like he's going to help him in the long haul. And that's what you want out of the fourth round.
He's a smart player that's always going to be in position. And then because of that, he's probably going to make some nice plays.
Where we're
sitting. Sure tackler, got plenty of speed. In the four games that I watched, he had two interceptions, one of them against Air Force that set up a score, and then he had one against Boise State that was negated because of a roughing the passer penalty on one of the defensive linemen that I didn't go back and see who that was. But four games, two picks, plenty of tackles. He's a tackling machine, takes good angles, always in position. Got sucked into one time. I think I saw him miss one tackle. One tackle, I think, in four games that, you know, made you go, But, I mean, when he comes, he's coming 100 miles an hour. And he certainly looks like a guy that right away put him on special teams, and he's going to be a factor.
Well, from where we sit on the calendar, you know, 4th of July is gone, first full week of July gone and training camp coming up, just this conversation has whet my appetite for football.
Yeah.
I mean, just about a kid who's never played in the NFL. Goodness gracious, let's get this thing done. Let's take a break. One more segment. Jaguars This Week continues right after this on News Talk Radio. WOKV, depend on it. All right, about 8 minutes left in our program this evening. Again, we're still waiting on a deal like many of you.
How many times have you been asked that question in the last week?
Over the 4th of July, it was just impressive. I didn't want to see anybody. I wanted to stay away from people because it was just nonstop. Because you can't just say yes or no. I mean, you got to give an explanation. And then there's all sorts of questions, and you can't answer any of them.
There's
not with any degree of accuracy.
There you can really tell. I mean, fans are ready, you know, because I mean, I'm getting a question 5, 6, 7, 8, 10 times a day. You know, is it going to get done?
Right.
Is it going to get done? You know, and my answer is yes, it's going to get done. And I believe that it will, and I believe that it's going to get done by this week. I really believe that.
And, Joe, what did you say earlier that that ESPN believes or was – what was it that
– Arthur Borland is going on vacation starting Saturday, not Monday, Saturday.
Right.
So the two sides want to have a CBA, at least on paper, by the close of business Friday.
And then that begins a ratification process. You need 24 owners, and obviously you need the players – to vote on. I don't know. What's their ratification process, Logs?
It's just a matter of getting all of the players to vote. But, I mean, I think that once you do that, you can do all of that kind of after the fact. You can get business started and say, okay, the vote's going to come. I couldn't possibly imagine that if there's an agreement, and they say, okay, well, we've got to have the players sign off on this, that things are going to wait until that happens.
But don't both courts, the Eighth Court and the Third Circuit, don't both of them have oversight over this? I mean, isn't there a delay? What I'm saying is if they have the framework at 11 o'clock on Friday night, when does the league season, the calendar year, open for free agency? It won't open Saturday morning. It won't open at 12:01.
No, but I think that – the biggest thing is establishing the dates. You know, hey, this is when it's going to start. Mm-hmm. This is when we're going to do this. And in a matter of days, they can get everybody to sign off on it, whether it be the courts, whether it be the owners, whether it be the players. I don't think that's an issue. I think that can come very quickly.
Both sides, yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, the judges want to get this resolved. I mean, they just want to go back to work, you know. I mean,
leave us out of it.
Yeah.
That's the judges.
And the players obviously have a vested interest in the money that rolls through August. Even if they're not getting full shares, it factors into what they get paid during the season.
Well, and it's going to be interesting to see what happens, too, with a lot of the off-season workout bonuses that were in contracts. You know, for example, the left tackle of the New York Jets. And
Brickishaw Ferguson.
Yeah, Brickishaw Ferguson.
A Virginia grad, and you lost his name for a moment?
Ferguson, yeah.
Yeah.
The Brickishaw.
Your guy.
You know, because here's a guy that supposedly had an off-season workout bonus for percentage of workouts completed. And when they lifted the lockout for that short period of time, he was at work the next day.
Yeah, he was collecting his money.
You know,
he didn't, but he wanted it.
Will he have an argument, say, hey, I want that money? You know, will this agreement talk about a lot of those things that were supposed to be paid out, roster bonuses that were supposed to be due back in, you know, March or whenever. It's going to be interesting to see how all of that gets resolved.
Yeah, and it's
going to be hard to imagine the players agreeing to something that didn't, you know, reward those players. But it could happen. It would just be hard to believe the players would agree to that, to those guys not getting their money in some capacity.
Yeah, because Brickshaw Ferguson, I don't remember the exact dollar amount, but I think it was a couple $100,000.
It was $750,000.
Was it that much?
A million, yeah.
Well, I would have been.
That's nothing to Logman, but to you and me, Sexton.
Yeah.
That's big money.
Kidding, that's retirement. Bring it on, baby.
If I was Brickshaw, I would have been 6 a.m. the day after the lockout was lifted, I would have been right there.
I'd have had a cot.
Oh, yeah. It would have been like camping out overnight for a concert or something. You know, the tickets go on sale tomorrow. Woohoo, yeah. I'm right there.
Everybody is ready to go.
Oh, yeah. I would have been right there going, hey, 750, I'm here to work out.
Well, let the madness begin. Here's the other thought, and that is the free agency. It would seem that we know the rules, right? I mean, players have all but said they're not going to go back to the 6 years for free agency.
No, it's going to be four.
Which means that the pool of potential unrestricted free agents has gotten bigger,
mm-hmm.
better. There's going to be a lot of people out there to sign in a very short period of time.
It'll also be interesting to see how that goes. In other words, perfect example, every team's got a Kirk Morrison. You know, a guy that you probably would have liked to have upgraded from, but here we are. We're not going to have a lot of time to develop somebody else, and you know, we don't have OTAs to get them up to speed. You know, do we just go ahead and pay a Kirk Morrison real quick? You know, How will the players react to that? Will they be less willing to go somewhere else because of the unknown and because it's a new system?
Shorter deals, right? I mean,
the
you'll
smart
see a lot
ones
of guys.
Will stay where they are, and the ones that aren't so smart will still believe that they've got more value than they do, and somebody will pay them. And I think you will see some guys go and make bad decisions on that front. And
you mean players or teams?
Both.
Okay,
but it's like I've written several times, bad decisions aren't limited to this process in the NFL. I mean, they'll be the same bad decisions you get every year in free agency.
Yeah.
Just more of them.
I think certainly, though, linebackers, two, possibly.
Mm-hmm.
You mean two possibly, three or two for sure?
Two for sure.
Okay.
In free agency, a corner in free agency.
Nnamdi Asamugha?
I don't know. That's going to be a lot of money.
I know. I was being facetious. That's going to be $16
Safety
million.
And two linebackers. I'd be a little surprised.
Safety, corner, two linebackers.
Yeah, I don't know about corner.
You don't think so?
I'd be surprised.
If there's one there that's at a reasonable price, I think it happens.
I think reasonable price is the key. I'm not sure. I can't see Gene overpaying at corner.
How about wide receiver? You think they look at that?
Nope.
We talked about it a little bit last week. You think if Sidney Rice is sitting out there, I'm just throwing a name, but a bigger name, a big playmaker that they
that's a
are
spot
tempted?
Where you can really, really easily make a big money mistake. I don't think they do that.
It's probably the biggest money mistake that teams make.
Well, you're right.
Receivers.
And I think I'd be surprised. I'm with Jeff. I'd be surprised if you go receiver. I think they see what they've got this year at receiver, and then if those guys don't develop, if you don't start seeing development from that spot, then you either draft or you sign a free agent next year.
Yeah, I think with Jarrett Dillard, who virtually is going to be a free agent acquisition because you didn't have him for last year, Cecil Shorts, who you got in the draft, I think you add them two into the mix. I think they're
– with Jason Hill and Mike Thomas.
Yeah, I think they're okay with that.
All right.
And
that was the only other position I could think that they'd spend on.
Well, and the reason I say that is that Dirk Koetter needs to find a way – to implement Zach Miller.
Yeah, you've been saying that.
To me, that's the number one, and I'm sure that he's racking his brain. You know, and I remember talking to Dirk last year about, you know, how do you get him more involved? And he said, you know, it was hard because we didn't have him in the OTAs to really kind of
– he's got
to
stay healthy.
Know what we got. Well, you're going to have him for camp.
Thanks, fellas. Hopefully next week at this time we're talking about a deal done. Of course, we've said that for a long time.